Oh, wait a minute, Igor. May I look at the bottle?
What for do you want to look?
Hey, watch see if it's a vintage year. Is it?
Yes. Oh, that's a bad year.
Bad year.
Perhaps this one's better for soft Americans.
No, this is a good year.
Water.
Now we will pour. You from your bottle, me from mine.
It's a democratic.
Oh, yeah.
It's the Wine Crush, a show that's all about wine and the lifestyle it creates. And now, here are your hosts, Laura Lawson and Michael Ambrose.
We've got to protect our phony baloney jobs.
Welcome to the weekly version of the Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson.
And I'm Michael Ambrose.
And you are listening to the show that's all about the grape in all its glory, all about the wine, all about the glass, and all about the fermentable fun that comes by from the fruit of the grape.
So what are we going to talk about this week?
We're having a lot of fun this week because we're going to go back a little bit. This week, we are talking about
history.
About the history of the grape, the history of the vine, and of course, the history of the beverage. So ultimately, by the time we get done with this show, your head will be stuffed with so many fun wine facts that you'll almost be smart enough to host the show or at least sit in for my co-host. That would be a great reality show for you.
Yes, indeed. Well, don't worry, that we're not going to have a test for you, so just sit back and relax.
Today also, we are going to have Richard Hake join us, our Napa Valley winery chef. He's going to come up with some great recipes that are seasonally involved in what's blooming in your garden and at your local Mega Mart right now. We'll tackle your calls and emails, and we'll be joined by a top winemaker today. As always, you can expect nothing but the best from your friends at The Crush. So, send us your questions, call us with your questions. You can reach us at 877-4-CRUSH-1, or you can send your emails to info@winecrush.com. Remember, it's you that makes this show special and all about you.
That's right, and if we don't know the answers to your questions, well, we can just make something up.
So, our fun history wine facts. In China, they were having wine in 7,000 BC.
Wow.
In Mesopotamia, they were having wine in 6,000 BC. In Egypt, in 5,000 BC. On Cyprus, in 3,000 BC. Greece, 2,000 BC. And your friends over the pond that you talk about their great history?
Yeah, the French.
The French, around 390 AD.
Really?
Yeah, okay. So they're the upstarts.
Yeah. Okay.
It's interesting. It's the Greek, though, no matter how much we look back and can date back when people are drinking wine, I think it's the Greeks that have the most influence over how we view wine. You had Dionysus. He was the Greek god of wine. There was Diana. She was the Greek goddess of wine.
Yeah.
And of course, anytime you start talking about Greek and Roman mythology, they all kind of bleed over because the Greeks all had their gods and goddesses, and the Romans kind of came in and adopted along the way.
They kind of copied them. Yeah, and it's interesting that you're talking about Dionysus being the Greek god of wine. The Romans actually copied that particular god, but they named him after the most recognizable name, and that's Bacchus.
Well, Michael, let's move a little bit into modern history and talk about some quick wine news. And this one just has me totally stumped, so let's kind of take a look at that. This comes from the Wine Spectator and Jacob Gaffney. And what they say is the University of California San Diego research team has found that a glass of wine a day can help keep a dangerous liver disease away.
Thank God. That's one of the things that's really been concerning me.
The study goes on to say that people who drink up to one glass of wine a day are not harming their liver and, in fact, are decreasing their risk of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Researchers also say it's too early to tell if all the benefits came from the alcohol or for the non-alcohol portions of wine.
Hmm.
I am sure that we need to put the caveat in there that more is not better.
Right.
In this case. That whereas a little bit of wine can help your liver, we all know a lot of wine can definitely hurt it.
That's really true. And I think the operative word here is one glass of wine a day.
We deign to educate about all facets that may involve wine. Fortunately for those of you, we do have an expert on food and wine. And today that is Richard Hake. He is the executive chef at Robert Mondavi Winery. Richard, thank you for being brave and coming back to The Crush.
Oh, you're very welcome. Happy to be back.
It's always nice to have eyes and ears out in California. I've got to ask, everything we hear in the news talks about all the big fires out in Napa Valley.
Right.
tell us what's going on, because last week you talked about using smoked paprika in your tilapia. Tell us about the smoke and the grapes in Napa.
Well, it was a smoky week in Napa, and a lot of friends in the tasting room said that many of the guests were noticing more smoky notes when they were tasting wine last week.
Like a Fumé Blanc?
Exactly.
Oh, bad, bad.
The smoke was very bad, and there was a lot of air warnings, hazardous air warnings, telling people to stay inside. And the news was really publicizing that the wine country was on fire, and that was not true. The fire was at the southernmost point of the valley, and it was heading over the mountain ranges into what's called Solano County, which is not part of wine country. So wine country was not on fire, and no vineyards did burn during the outbreak of fires in the past couple weeks. So we're doing fine, and visitors are returning to the winery, and there's less smoky notes in the wine.
Oh, well, that's good.
That does help. And actually, you are correct. The news did lead all of us to believe that Napa Valley was just apparently on fire all the way up Highway 29, even to the point where I picked up the phone and called my buddies at Far Niente and at Donna Wineries, saying, oh my God, are y'all okay?
No, we were doing just fine. Just hazy skies. It just reminded me of my trips to Los Angeles or Atlanta on a smoggy day.
There you go.
Fair enough. Well, Richard, it's great to know that you are safely out of the woods and our favorite wineries are out of the woods. But can we expect to see any more fires and warnings like this? What are y'all anticipating?
It's going to be a very bad fire season, and it's very early in the year to have these fires, and a lot of people are nervous because fire season usually starts in September.
Right.
But it was a very dry year, and the drought conditions and the change in the weather patterns in Northern California have led people to be very nervous in the past couple weeks.
Understandably, between fire and mudslides and rain, y'all definitely take the worst brunt of Mother Nature out there.
Well, as long as the vines stay strong, everyone in wine country is going to be just fine. We're continue to produce wonderful wines and get them to the fine people in the United States to enjoy with a good meal.
Well, great. Well, thank you for being our on-the-spot reporter. And now that we know that Napa Valley wines are not going to be history.
That's right.
Will you mind hanging out in the studio for a little bit while we cover some other things? And we'll get to your recipe later in the show.
Absolutely. Need to make you hungry again for another radio program.
I love
it. Sounds great.
For those of you who actually want to put a face with the name of the idiots you hear on your radio, we encourage you, go to our website, winecrush.com. You can find out all and more of anything you ever wanted to know about Michael and me.
Almost.
Right there.
Almost everything.
So please do check that out. Those of you who'd like to reach out for us directly, please do at info@winecrush.com or call us at 877-4-CRUSH-1. Someone who has emailed us a very pertinent question is Chad from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Chad writes, what is the oldest winery in California still operating today? Chad, the oldest winery in California still operating is Buena Vista.
That's right. And do you know what the second oldest winery is?
I know the second oldest family-owned winery is Gunlock Bunshoe.
That's right.
Okay. But Chad, Buena Vista was founded, I believe, around 1846, and it was the first one to have Mission grapes planted. And it's the first one to actually sit back, clo in their vineyards, and produce wines.
There you go.
So, Chad, consider yourself enlightened.
He's looking at you, kid.
Check out the new Wine Crush website to see what Laura and Michael look like, and for lots of cool information about wine. Our website is winecrush.com. We'll return with more of the Wine Crush in a moment.
This is Mark Garrow, and today we're taking a closer look at value, and the big story is Chevy Silverado. Did you know it has the lowest cost of ownership of any full-size pickup? It does that by bringing you a combination of the lowest annual fuel costs and the highest expected resale value. So when you're looking for value, look no further than the Chevy Silverado. Ownership claim based on Vincentric's 2007 model level analysis and resale claim based on the 2008 automotive lease guide. Check out Chevy.com for more info.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Chad.
What's up?
You know that Cobalt Tools commercial we just did? Where I go around fixing things, and in the end, you ask me to get in the car?
Yeah.
Well, I just got a call from this big Hollywood agent who saw it and wants me to come in and see him.
Wow, that's great. What's he want you to do, star in a movie or something?
No, he wants me to fix a door in his office. What's so funny?
Cobalt tools are so comfortable to use, once you start working with them, you'll never want to quit. Cobalt, the next generation of tough tools. Available only at Lowe's.
Hey-ya! Doug, are you okay?
Mark, I'm practicing my ninja moves so I can take on weeds with Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer.
Do you mean there are ninjas inside the Spectracide bottle?
Well, using Spectracide is like sending an army of tiny green ninjas to kill weeds and unwanted grass right down to the root. You see the result in as fast as 3 hours.
I see, Sensei. I'm heading over to Lowe's to pick up Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer with ninja fighting power.
Just remember, Mark, weeds can't hide from Spectracide.
There's a reason Roush Performance chooses Cooper Tires for their high-performance vehicles. Just ask Cooper Tires technical advisor, Johnny Unser.
Roush tunes vehicles to reach their absolute limits. They need tires that can handle those limits, from handling to durability to safety. That's why they choose Cooper. And that same race-bred technology goes into every Cooper tire you buy, no matter what you drive.
For more information and to find a dealer near you, visit CooperTire.com. Cooper Tires. Don't give up a thing.
Bring the ball up. See the court, baby. See the court.
Let's go.
All right, see open man. Go pass.
That's listen good. Carefully.
Yeah!
Okay, get back. Right. Play some.
What do you hear?
Good deep.
Yes!
Do you know what that is?
No, that's right. Okay.
That's the sound of someone being there.
All right.
The sound of someone caring about a kid.
Good shot. Yes! Yes!
That's the sound of a mentor. See a movie together, play catch, or just hang out. The important thing is spending time together. A little of your time means a lot to a kid.
This is Laura Bush. Help America's youth. Be a friend. Be a mentor. Just be there.
To be a mentor, go to BigBrothersBigSisters.org. That's BigBrothersBigSisters.org. A public service message brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities.
Have a banana.
Eating well. Have two bananas. And playing.
Come on, Baloo.
Go together like best friends.
You better believe it.
With the food pyramid, the bare necessities of living healthy are easy.
That bring the bare necessities of life.
It gives you just the right amount of grains, vegetables, fruits, milk, and meats and beans.
Crazy.
So eat right.
You eat it?
You're gonna love the way they tickle.
Be active.
Now move. That's it.
And don't forget to have fun.
You're lots of fun, Baloo.
That's the way to be the best.
You're all right, kid.
At anything you do.
Yeah, man.
You can go to mypyramid.gov to play some games and find out more.
Me and Baloo, we've got things to do.
This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ad Council.
Check out the new Wine Crush website to see what Laura and Michael look like and for lots of cool information about wine. Our website is winecrush.com.
Welcome back to the Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson.
And I'm Michael Ambrose.
And we are continuing on our merry way of talking about the grape in all its glory. Today's theme is stupid wine facts. Oh, no, sorry, that's usually the show. Today is wine history. Basically, we are having fun with things to laugh about over your next glass of the blessed grape. Michael, do you know who some of the most prolific winemakers were?
I think I do. They were some of my great friends, and they were all churchmen.
They were all churchmen?
Uh-huh.
As opposed to church mice?
Yes.
Actually, you are correct. Early Catholic Church continued the winemaking traditions of the Roman Empire, largely for ceremonial purposes. Religious orders, such as the Benedictines, became one of the largest producers of wine. You look at the regions in France, particularly Bordeaux. You look at Burgundy. And you find a lot of those clothes had a lot to do with monks and a lot to do with their abbeys. You look at California.
California, I was going to mention that as well.
California owes its winemaking history to monks. In fact, in 1769, Franciscan missionary Father Junipero Serra planted the first California vineyard at Mission San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately in California, when you look up and down the coast, you would see wines called Mission wines.
Right.
Because it was made out of the quote-unquote mission grape.
Yeah.
And regardless of where you look around the world, it's your religious orders and factions that have determined a lot of the wine-growing regions.
Right.
Wine Crush, we are always delighted to bring you a vast assortment of great guests, and today proves to be no exception. We have Van Williamson. He is the winemaker for Ed Mead's Winery in the Anderson Valley up around Mendocino. Van is also known as Van Animal and a dear friend of us here at the Crush. Van, welcome to the Wine Crush.
Thank you.
Van, one of the interesting things that I know about you and I have read is a great quote, and I just curious how it relates to your Zinfandel. Your quote read, "I let the vineyard tell me how to make the wine. The fruit from each vineyard is different, and it all has to be treated differently." You make probably nine different Zinfandels. Do you hold true to all of that all the way through?
Yeah, all of it treated differently is mainly I treat each vineyard and pick it when I think the flavors are right there. And each one of those will be treated that way, similar. But the difference is the picking time and the flavors. And what I meant by that statement mainly is I liked letting the site, you know, have a big influence on the way the wine tastes. So if you tasted a lineup of our wines, every vineyard speaks to itself. You know, every wine will taste different. We have our house style, which is power, you know, a lot of alcohol. I'm looking at one right here, 17%.
Wow.
You know, 15.2 is our Shamrock. That's our lowest. 15.8 on the Pearly. Piffero's 15.5. So that, you know.
Definitely some large wines.
Zini's 16.2. And so, yeah, they're high alcohol, and they're intensely flavored. But at the same time, as far as Zinfandels go, we're sort of elegant and have restraint.
I am Laura Lawson.
And I'm Michael Ambrose.
And you are listening to Van Williamson, the winemaker for Ed Mead's Winery, here on the Wine Crush. Van, Zinfandel sometimes gets mistaken a lot of times. If you ask people if they drink Zin, they say they drink white Zinfandel. For all of our listeners who may not have had an opportunity to taste a red Zinfandel, what do you say to them? What if someone has never tried a red Zin?
They don't know what they're missing, really, because it's, you know, we used to call it America's variety, California. You know, when I first started making wine, one of the reasons I liked making Zinfandel is this: it was our wine. You know, there was no other place on earth that did it better than California. You couldn't go to the old world like you make Bordeaux. You have a standard in the old world to go to measure up against.
Right.
With Zinfandel, our standards we measure up against are California standards. There's no place on earth that grows Zinfandel better than California, even though we found out now that it originated in Croatia and, you know, came to California through there somehow. Still, we own the variety as far as quality goes.
I don't happen to disagree with that. I definitely think it's our family.
So if they haven't only tried white, they really are missing out because, you know, the red variety, you know, is far more flavorful.
Van, something we have is you're also known as Vanimal. Explain your nickname to us.
Well, it came from my days of working at Chateau Montelena. I think Bo Barrett gave me that nickname.
Yeah.
It might have been because I like to have a good time, but also I used to joke around about being able to smell deer, you know, and tell them I could smell a buck compared to a doe because they have a different scent. And I think they thought I was a little crazy when I told them that because I don't think they smelled deer, but I still smell deer.
You mentioned your website. Why don't you give us that address?
It's at edmeads.com.
Okay.
And we have a place if you want to join our wine club or anything like that. That's available on the website, and it explains about the different wines we have available.
Okay, and that's edmeads.
Yeah, .com.
Okay.
Easy enough. And for those of you just joining us, you are listening to The Wine Crush, and I'm Laura Lawson.
And I'm Michael Ambrose.
And we are having the pleasure of talking with Van Williamson, the winemaker for Ed Mead's Winery. Van, what would you say to beginner wine drinkers? What's the best advice from all your history, all your background that you can give for people who are just starting to learn about wine?
Don't pay attention always to price.
Right.
Because, you know, marketing, it has a lot to do with the price on wines. You know, you can find nice wines that are, you know, maybe aren't going to, you know, break you. I know you know, everyone hears about the wines that are very expensive, but that's almost intimidating for people to get into drinking wine because they think they have to spend a lot of money to have a good wine. And
mm-hmm.
And that's one thing about Zinfandel. It's always been a moderately priced, high-quality wine. So, like, we make a very good Zinfandel, and our lowest price one's around $17 a bottle, and it goes up to around, you know, our highest price is $30. But, you know, so Zinfandel is a good variety for if you're price conscious because you get a lot for your money in Zinfandel. Pinot Noir right now used to be a you know, fairly reasonable variety in California, whereas Burgundy is very expensive
right.
for the same thing. But now, with the movie Sideways, Pinot is it's really hard to get a good quality Pinot without spending quite a bit of money.
Amen.
So yep. every variety is a little different, and the best thing to do is to go to a shop that specializes with a wine steward there. That's how I got into wine when I was in college and switched majors from civil engineering to wine was I went to the wine shop where I bought beer. I knew a lot about beer, but I didn't know anything about wine. I just started asking questions about wine, and the wine steward led me through and taught me what I was tasting, what oak tastes like, where's the fruit. So, like, if you have our wines, we try to hide the oak. I don't like the taste of oak in my wines. I like it being the backbone, sort of like a building, the studs holding up the building.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
peel the siding off to find the studs. That's how I sort of like my oak in the background. But a lot of people have oak up in the front ground, and a wine steward can tell you to, oh, this is American oak in there, and have you taste it, and you the beginning taster, and go and look for that American oak, and then show them, well, this is strong in French oak. Maybe he doesn't like the wine, but at least it's, you know, has an example of the French oak that the person can taste, and then tell them, well, look what fruits, you know, and having a person who knows his wines, and or even a Whole Foods. I know you guys have Whole Foods out there, and Whole Foods usually has somebody who knows wine in there, and they can help lead you through. But a good wine shop is where a key to have.
We have been speaking with Van Williamson, the winemaker for Ed Meads, the legendary Zinfandel producer up in Mendocino County. Van, thank you very much for having been part of The Crush today.
Well, thank you, Laura. I had a great time, and I hope you guys had a good time, too.
Absolutely. And anytime you feel like being the van animal again, please do call us back.
Okay, thanks. And look forward to hearing from you this harvest.
All right, bye, dear.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yes, America's favorite program will be back. You'll get more laughs, more fun, more thrill.
This is the Wine Crush.
And now Jimmy Johnson's working on the Watson's garage door. He's got the old motor off. He's got the new motor on. The door's up. The door's down. He's gone. What do you got, Brett?
I got a stall truck here on Maple. Jimmy's got the hood up. His hands are a blur. I tell you, Doug, I haven't seen ratcheting like that in years. Now back to you.
He just finished building a new doghouse for an extremely appreciative Cocker Spaniel. Now he's wiping the slobber off. Wait, he sees a broken gate over to
Cobalt tools are so comfortable to use. Once you start working with them, you'll never want to quit. Cobalt, the next generation of tough tools. Available only at Lowe's.
Z-Max. It helps your car, truck, motorcycle, or boat save gas and last longer. The secret of Z-Max is micro-lubrication. Z-Max penetrates deep into the metal of your engine and drivetrain where regular oil can't. Z-Max reduces heat and friction, dissipates carbon buildup, restores power, and reduces fuel consumption. Z-Max maintains mileage in your new car and improves mileage in your older car. It works. Log on to Z-Max.com to find a Z-Max retail performance partner. Z-Max. Performance you can feel.
You wanna go? All of you who wanna go to college.
Wanna go?
You best listen to this knowledge. Listen. You gotta be a go-getter, cause it's hard to get there. Get up in their face, get up in their space. Excuse me, missus. You say you're my teacher, you say you're my preacher. Excuse me, mister. You act like you're large and you say you're in charge. So show me, what is it that I need? So tell me, the books I should read. Somebody hit me with the 411. There are steps to take, there's a job to be done. I want step one, step two, step three spelled out. All the info is what I'm about. So ask for help and do not stop. knowhowtogo.org. Let's ride.
That was Farnsworth Bentley with Wanna Go. For more college info, visit knowhowtogo.org. Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ad Council.
Son, I want you home by 10, all right?
I know.
Hold on. Listen, we need to talk about drinking. You know how I feel about alcohol.
Yeah, I know.
Seriously, you're way too young to drink. I know some kids are drinking, but you're my kid. And just because they drink doesn't mean you have to.
I know.
I mean, you're still growing. You're still developing. You may think you can handle it, but you're not a grown-up yet. It's dangerous.
I know, okay?
Teenagers know everything. So talk about underage drinking before they know it all. Before they're teens.
Listen, when you drink, it screws up your judgment. I don't want you getting hurt. You could make some serious mistakes.
I know, I know.
Listen to me. This is real.
I know, okay? I know.
Start talking before they start drinking. And keep talking. To learn more about the dangers of underage drinking and what to say to your kids, go to stopalcoholabuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You must be your fairy godmother. Yes.
It doesn't take a fairy godmother to tell you that the right fit means everything.
Good heavens, child. You can't go in that.
Children under 4'9" need to be in a booster seat because they aren't ready for adult safety belts alone. Many parents miss the important step of booster seats.
Maybe you better explain things to him.
Booster seats raise your child up so that a safety belt designed for adults will fit and protect them properly.
Oh, that does make a difference.
Remember that 4'9" is the magic number. And get your little pumpkin there safely in a booster seat.
Hop in, my dear. Oh, thank you.
And like Cinderella, you can live happily ever after.
It's like a dream. A wonderful dream come true.
For more information, visit boosterseat.gov. This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
The opinions, intelligence, and all-around soundness of mind of the hosts of The Wine Crush vary with how much alcohol, sleep, and stress they have experienced at the time of recording. If you find errors, think that you find errors, or just want to take issue with something, call us at 1-877-4-CRUSH-1. We may return your call or air the correction depending on how moody the hosts are at that given moment. And remember, just because they claim to know everything does not mean they actually do or would admit fault anyway. Thank you.
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson.
And I'm Michael Ambrose.
And before you think of us as the most brilliant wine people on the planet, we do have a small confession to make. Our crack research staff of two small hamsters, a rat, a turkey vulture, and the occasional rabbit, they generally steal most of our fun wine facts from other sources. So if you're reading over and find somewhere along the lines where we may have gotten something out of sort, blame the rat.
But let's be true about it. You really have got a pretty extensive wine knowledge yourself. You're pretty smart. I hate to admit it, but truly you are.
Sometimes I know occasionally what I'm talking about. What's great about the wine business, what's great about the wine industry, and what's great about drinking wine at home is wine is all about stories and it's all about people. And while we're talking about history today, it's important to note that it's not the Chardonnay grape that makes the history. It is the monks that made it. It is the fine winemakers that made it. It's the land that made it. It's the stories that made Chardonnay famous. And it's just one of those things. You can be very knowledgeable about wine as long as you remember the stories and talking about people.
That's right.
I mean, Michael, you have great technical knowledge as well. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, whether we're doing dinners or doing the show.
Yeah, it's the experience.
It's the experience. And it's talking about all the stuff that we have picked on that makes the grape special.
Yeah. And it's the people that you meet. It's the combination with foods. That's my favorite part of it. And let's get back to some history.
The oldest vineyard in the world is in Maribor, Slovenia.
I had never heard that.
Documented, proven fact, this vineyard is 400 years old. It has never been replanted. It has never been added to. And only produces close to 7 pounds of grapes a year.
Wow.
So that's interesting. That's old history. It's new history. Even though the Brotherhood Winery is America's oldest winery in New York, New York City is about to have its own winery.
I have heard that.
New York, a wonderful town. The Bronx is up and the battery's down. The people ride in a hole in the ground. New York, New York, it's a wonderful town.
Jane Furstenfield from Wines and Vines reports, if you can make wine there, you can make it anywhere. City Winery, brainchild of entrepreneur promoter Michael Dorf, is scheduled to open in Manhattan's downtown Soho this fall. It's a hybrid between a winery and a dinner nightclub, Dorf told Wines and Vines. Your club will be open to the public, but the winemaking facilities is going to be exclusive to members only.
Yeah, isn't it that you get to buy into a barrel of wine, and then when you come to the restaurant, you can pick from your barrel or pick from your particular bottles that you've made?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. It'll be interesting to see how New York responds to this. There's a number of California wineries that actually allow you to go out to harvest and to actually put your wine into barrel.
Right.
But it would be fascinating to go to a club and say, oh, yes, I'll have my vintage, please.
Yes, indeed.
So we encourage those of you in New York to look out for the club and call us at 877-4-CRUSH-1 and let us know how your first vintage fared. We're California bound. All right, we've had enough of our news. Let's bring Richard Hake back to the show. Richard is the chef for Robert Mondavi Winery. Richard, are you still hanging in there with us?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for hanging in there. Hey, Richard, as long as we're talking about history, did you know that the Spanish conquistadors brought the wine vine to California and that the missions were some of the earliest vineyards in America?
I've actually heard that fact, and that's why the Robert Mondavi Winery is designed in a mission style, because Mr. Mondavi wanted to acknowledge the Spanish's contributing the wine vine to California.
I figured that's why you had that lovely bell tower up there.
Absolutely.
All right, Richard, well, what am I going to be eating this week? I know that we are talking about warm summertime. I think we are trying to do a salute to salads, at least for all of us women who have to be forced into a bathing suit here shortly.
I was just out in the garden, and our watermelons are starting to ripen, and we do a lovely watermelon salad here, which not many people probably think of the watermelon for a salad to pair with wine, so I thought that would be a good choice.
Wow, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it's wonderful, and of course, I do recommend a seedless watermelon.
Well, why don't you tell us about it?
Well, it's a watermelon salad with pickled red onions, feta cheese, mint, and baby spinach, and it just all starts with cubing your watermelon, and if you know how to take the rind off a watermelon and dice it into cubes, you're on your way to a successful salad that pairs well with a lot of different wines.
We encourage you to check out our website for the recipe for this great salad, and you can check that out at winecrush.com. We will have this posted so that you don't have to try and write and drive at the same time. All right, Richard, what exactly would you pair with this?
And I'm going to recommend a Chenin Blanc.
Okay.
Ah, I'm a Chenin Blanc fanatic. I had gotten into that this spring. I think that would be a delightful pair. Michael, what would you drink with this?
Well, slap me, but I think a white Zinfandel would go really well with it. You're talking pink, a pink salad with a pink wine. Both of them have obviously a lot of floral characteristics and sweetness involved, and I think that's what I would choose for it. How about you?
That loud thump that most of our listeners just heard was me falling out of my chair because Michael actually recommended a white Zinfandel with this.
Yeah.
Michael, I'd have to go a little bit different than you. I would go to Southern California and look at one of their Sauvignon Blancs.
Oh, really?
Simply, you look at the mint, you look at the spinach. With a little bit of sweetness, I think it would really bring the fruit out of those Sauvignon Blancs.
That's really interesting.
What are people's reactions when you make a salad with watermelon in it? Obviously, coming from the South, one of the delicacies we saw in the summertime was the watermelon onion cucumber salad.
Mm-hmm.
But what do people on the West Coast think about putting the big watermelon in a salad?
They love it, especially because I'm using feta cheese, which is goat cheese. And
right.
You know, all us folks out here in California love any salad with goat cheese. So they're tickled pink.
Oh, no.
Oh, you are blending in better show after show after show. Well, Richard, thank you very, very much for your insights on the salad and the wine and our salute to salad progression. I am sure that you will come up with other delectable ideas as the show continues.
I'm looking forward to it.
On old dogs and children and watermelon wine.
Let's get back to your calls and emails. Call us at 877-4-CRUSH-1 or email us at info@winecrush.com.
And Laura, we've got an email from Tom in Colorado Springs, Colorado. My wife is allergic to sulfites and she can't find a good wine without them. You really can't make wine without sulfites. It's a byproduct of the wine fermentation process. And secondly, sulfur is used to clean all of the equipment, and so you're going to find small residual amounts, but it's the sulfite in a bottle of wine is less than the sulfite in a loaf of bread.
Michael, we get this question a lot, and it falls in that category of things that are really, really important to people. I know there's a lot of people out there who would probably drink more wine if they were more comfortable with some of the repercussions. But ultimately, sulfites are naturally occurring. They're going to occur in the fermentation process. They are used as additions to the fermentation process. And it's just not possible to get a good wine without sulfites. There are a couple on the market that tout themselves as sulfite-free. And to the best of my knowledge, there's only two wineries that actually take the time to remove the sulfites. This falls in the same category as the alcohol-free wines where wines have had the alcohol removed.
Right, right.
Skip them, walk right by them, go find the Welsh's grape juice as opposed to actually drinking these. But a note to our listeners on the sulfites, there is confusing labeling out there. And even in the wines where you see sulfites not added, there are still sulfites in the bottle. Definitely understand that with United States labeling laws, anytime you look at the back of a bottle of wine, it's going to say contains sulfites. That means that there is less than 10 parts per million of right. sulfites in that bottle. We mentioned earlier in the program a little bit about Benedictine monks, but it's time for our weekly wine teaser. And here's a question. The early Christian church was actively involved in winemaking. What world-famous champagne is named for a churchman?
I think I know, Laura.
All right, the answer for the rest of you when we return.
Hey-ya! Doug, are you okay?
Mark, I'm practicing my ninja moves so I can take on weeds with Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer.
Do you mean there are ninjas inside the Spectracide bottle?
Well, using Spectracide is like sending an army of tiny green ninjas to kill weeds and unwanted grass right down to the root. You see the result in as fast as 3 hours.
I see, Sensei. I'm heading over to Lowe's to pick up Spectracide Weed and Grass Killer with ninja fighting power.
Just remember, Mark, weeds can't hide from Spectracide.
Looking for some good news at the gas pump? Chevy has 7 models that offer an EPA estimated 30 miles per gallon highway or better. From HHR with an EPA estimated 30 mpg highway, to the Aveo 5 with an EPA estimated 34 mpg highway, and Cobalt XFE with an EPA estimated 36 miles per gallon highway. Chevy's MVPs of MPG, based on EPA segmentation. See your local Chevy dealer.
I'm on a test track, riding in a Roush Mustang with Cooper Tires technical advisor Johnny Unser to learn why Roush Performance chooses Cooper Tires.
Wow, feel that grip?
Yeah, yeah, I felt it. Cooper incorporates what they learn at the track into engineering high-performing, reliable, safe tires for whatever you drive on the street.
Okay, time to cut her loose.
We weren't already cutting her loose? Cooper Tires, don't give up a thing. For more information and to find a dealer near you, visit CooperTire.com. Okay, seriously, I want out.
When a legend like Carroll Shelby puts Z-Max in every car he owns, maybe you should too.
I know it works.
Z-Max with micro-lubrication reduces wear on vital engine parts and increases horsepower. If you're a custom engine builder or a do-it-yourselfer, Z-Max belongs in your car. Z-Max. Easy to use. One in your gas and one in your oil every 5,000 miles. Take it from Carroll Shelby.
I put my name on the line on that, and I mean it.
Log on to ZMAX.com and find a retail performance partner. Z-Max. Performance you can feel.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Dying forests, they were a tap on the shoulder. We got a finger in our chest from the rising sea level. And a sharp poke in the ribs from recent wildfires in Alaska. Then dying coral reefs and eroding coastlines pushed us. Hard. The drowned polar bears, that was a shove. Melting permafrost, that was a slap. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
we can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution before it's too late. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
This is empty now. It's time to rise and shine. There's one less cause in the world to be living for.
All right, welcome back to the Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson.
And I'm Michael Ambrose.
And we have been having fun with wine facts and history about wine today. When we went to the break, we left you with this wine teaser. What famous champagne is named for a churchman?
And that name would be Dom Perignon.
Correct. And if you actually named the monk, then feel free to pop a cork and raise a glass in celebration. But while you're raising that glass, make sure that you say, "My Lord, I am tasting the stars."
That's right, because that's what he said.
Yeah. Just for the record, Dom Perignon did not invent champagne, as some of you have been led to believe. That was done a couple decades before, actually in the same region
right.
that the Abbey was in, but he was not the creator. He did add a lot to the concept of champagne. Dom Perignon was the first one to advocate blending different vineyards together. He was the first one to blend different grapes together, and he was the first one to truly grasp what fermentation meant as far as champagne. Obviously, in the region where they were making the champagne, it was naturally occurring in the sense that when it got really, really cold, the fermentation kind of stopped. And once it warmed back up, it would start again. But Dom was the first one to sit down and truly understand what could be maximized from this.
Right. And, you know, he was really into genetics in the beginning about crossbreeding different species.
Yes. So a very, very sage old monk to bring us such a great invention that we celebrate to this day. Let's bring on some more of those calls and emails. Call us at 877-4-CRUSH-1 or email us at info@winecrush.com. Betsy from Lancaster, South Carolina writes, "What is the stuff left in the bottle after we poured it out? If this gets into a glass, is this an etiquette no-no?" Michael, you're the restaurant expert.
It is not a no-no. However, I've had to send back many bottles of wine because there's stuff in the glass, and that stuff can be one of two different things, either sediment or another substance called crystal tartrates. Crystal tartrates are typically found in white wines, and it looks like little pieces of ground glass. As a matter of fact, it tastes like little pieces of ground glass. It's not going to hurt you, and it's usually on higher-end wines. On the other hand, the sediment is what falls out of the suspension over time.
Betsy, I'm going to tie you into another email when I give you the intelligent answer for this question. Kenneth from Bristol, Tennessee writes, "When should I use a decanter?" Since, Betsy, you were focusing on the etiquette no-no. Yes, it is an etiquette no-no to actually have the sediment poured into a glass. And if you've been to a high-end restaurant or ever watched one of these shows, there is a decanter. And the reason people use a decanter generally is two reasons, the most important of which, with your older wines, it's to make sure the sediment remains in the bottle and not in the glass. Where sediment and tartrate crystals will not hurt you, it's just really unappetizing. And for those of you who've had an opportunity to drink wine out of a glass that had sediment in it, the first need you have is to brush your teeth because you look like you've been drinking Syrah all day. Your teeth are just purple. But honestly, you decant your wines so that they can breathe, so you can remove the sediment. And so on the off chance you have an unfiltered white wine or red wine, you can get rid of the tartrate crystals.
If a bottle does not show sediment in it, that you decant it because you can get air to it faster, and it just makes it taste better.
Michael, have you seen these new devices? They go on the top of the bottle. I think they're called aerators.
Mm-hmm. We are using them at our restaurant.
For our listeners, as you may or may not know, everyone's coming out with all these new cool wine gadgets to make wine drinking easier or more sophisticated. Actually, I think it just makes it more difficult. But there is a product on the market called a wine aerator. And it fits on top of a wine bottle, almost like, a carburetor does in the engine.
Yeah.
And what happens is you pour the wine through this addendum on the top of the bottle. And what it does, it helps add air into the bottle so that the wine doesn't have to breathe as long or so that it softens the edges. I have not personally had great success using one.
We do use them at the restaurant. And it's actually got a little wire mesh filter within the carburetor or the funnel thing, and then the ones that we're using have got four outlets, and so it sprays the wine out in four different directions when you pour the wine through that funnel. And it helps in several ways. One, you don't have to be very astute as far as separating the sediment from the wine.
Which is good for you.
Yes, it is. I usually have a shaky hand. And secondarily, it gets more air to the wine.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
We encourage those of you out there who have tried the aerators, call us or email us. Let us know how well they've worked for you. You can call us at 877-4-CRUSH-1, or you can email us at info@winecrush.com. I am probably like most of you out there. The concept of having four different holes to pour more wine out of is just intimidating to me, the fact that I tend to pour red wine all over anything I touch anyway. As long as we are carrying along on the fact of sediment and decanting, we have a question now from Tarpon Springs, Florida. And they're asking, if sediment is in a bottle, does that mean it's a good bottle or it's a bad bottle? Michael?
Yeah, I think it usually means that it's a good bottle. The fact is, the world famous guru Robert Parker will tell you that he thinks wines get stripped of their flavor if they go through a heavy filtration. And racking and fining is a far more delicate operation where you just let the wine sit and the sediment will fall to the bottom of it, and then you draw off the clarified wine. When it doesn't go through a heavy filtration, there's a good chance that you'll find some sediment in the bottle itself. It's usually a good indication that the wine is good.
Michael is accurate for what he's saying, but as usual, he is speaking a little bit above most of our heads. Ultimately, to get sediment in a bottle, it means the wine has not been filtered as much as some of your mass-produced wines. That tends to be a sign of more expensive wines. And literally, when they filter wines, it's just like filtering something. I don't know, if you're pouring oil out of a pan back into a container to make gravy, it's taking a cheesecloth and pouring the wine back through it so that all the solid matter stays in the cloth and not in the wine. And because it takes a lot of extra time to do this by hand, to not do it by centrifuge, it's usually your more expensive wines that wind up with enough particles that can create sediment. And generally you find this in red wines. Generally, it's a good sign to see sediment.
We will sell no wine before it's time.
The Wine Crush.
There's a reason Roush Performance chooses Cooper Tires for their high-performance vehicles. Just ask Cooper Tires technical advisor, Johnny Unser.
Roush tunes vehicles to reach their absolute limits. They need tires that can handle those limits, from handling to durability to safety. That's why they choose Cooper. And that same race-bred technology goes into every Cooper tire you buy, no matter what you drive.
For more information and to find a dealer near you, visit CooperTire.com. Cooper Tires. Don't give up a thing.
Hey, Mark, have you noticed any of the Spectracide Green Ninjas around the track?
Green Ninjas, Doug?
Yeah, I'm serious. I haven't noticed any weeds or nasty crabgrass. They must have used Spectracide Weed Stop plus Crabgrass Killer.
You know, I haven't seen any crabgrass.
Using Spectracide is like sending an army of tiny green ninjas to take out the weeds without harming your lawn. You see results in as fast as 8 hours.
Hand me a bottle of Spectracide Weed Stop plus Crabgrass Killer. I'll get those ninjas in my yard.
Weeds can't hide from Spectracide.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Chad.
What's up?
You know that Cobalt Tools commercial we just did, where I go around fixing things and in the end you ask me to get in the car?
Yeah.
Well, I just got a call from this big Hollywood agent who saw it and wants me to come in and see him.
Wow, that's great. What's he want you to do, star in a movie or something?
No, he wants me to fix a door in his office. What's so funny?
Cobalt tools are so comfortable to use, once you start working with them, you'll never want to quit. Cobalt, the next generation of tough tools. Available only at Lowe's.
This is Mark Garrow, and today we're taking a closer look at value, and the big story is Chevy Silverado. Did you know it has the lowest cost of ownership of any full-size pickup? It does that by bringing you a combination of the lowest annual fuel costs and the highest expected resale value. So when you're looking for value, look no further than the Chevy Silverado. Ownership claim based on Vincentric's 2007 model level analysis, and resale claim based on the 2008 automotive lease guide. Check out Chevy.com for more info.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared.
It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs.
I start to cough. Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Today, one out of 13 children suffer from some form of asthma, accounting for nearly one-third of all emergency room visits.
I feel like I'm choking.
It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
A little whistle sound comes out when I breathe.
But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Log on to www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
For all sorts of fun information about wine, go to our new website, winecrush.com. That's winecrush, all one word, .com.
Welcome back to The Crush. You have Laura Lawson and Michael Ambrose, and we've been having a lot of fun talking about wine and history, or more wine history, if you prefer. But where would all the wine be without cork?
Yep, that's a good question.
I know we encourage you to put a cork in it on a fair amount of time. But however, it turns out the cork is almost as old as wine itself, and it goes all the way back to the Egyptians. We have had a lot of fun on the show, and we've laughed a lot, but that doesn't change the fact that occasionally we have to have the flip side of laughing. And we haven't done a great gripe in a while here on The Crush.
That's right.
But back by popular demand, it is time for The Grape Gripe.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
My gripe goes hand in hand with what we've been discussing on the show, and ultimately it's wine history.
Right.
And I think one of the fascinating things is it always comes to mind when you bring up Dom Perignon. Ultimately, wine history is what makes wine interesting.
Yeah.
Whether it's the
right.
history of the vineyard, whether it's the history of the winemaker, the history of the dirt. But the people who go around and give false history based off what they've heard three and four and five times removed are the ones that really bother me.
What are you talking about?
It's the waiters and the waitresses
oh, okay.
sitting at a restaurant that come up and tell you that Dom Perignon created champagne.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Ultimately, if you are going to be in a situation where you are in public and people are taking from you wine knowledge, make sure your knowledge is accurate. We hope that anyone who is in a wine knowledge educational position has taken the time to do their homework. But for those of you who are dealing with the public day in and day out and are in the business, please make sure that you are enlightening people correctly.
Right.
We have enough problems fighting myths and urban legends when it comes to wine. The last thing we need to do is have rampant misinformation running around the country. That's all the time we have today. Let's move on into history. I am Laura Lawson.
And I'm Michael Ambrose.
And just remember, in vino veritas, in wine, there is truth.